you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
What is up, my fellow addicts? This is a unique episode. It is a Zoom episode, but it is with Big J Okerson, and we are interviewing a TV legend, Jerry Springer. I've never seen Jay so engaged in my life. A really fun episode. He tells some unique stories about the years of Jerry Springer and even talks about his brief recent appearance on The Masked Singer. Very cool guy. Thrilled that we got him on. Remember, we do this every Wednesday, every Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern time. You could have heard this a week early at GasDigitalNetwork.com if you use the code STR and you get a 7-day free trial, 20% off, and a bunch of other cool shit. Plus, that fuzzy feeling knowing you're supporting the SDR show during the holiday season. But really, just listen, share, tell people all about it. And here it is right now, the Jerry Springer episode of the SDR show.
This is the intro to the shit show. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. This is a hit show. Show me a tit show. Please, someone fuck the hoe. It's weed, I beat, it's hookers and blow. It's art, you need to know. The SDR show. Let's go.
It is the SDR show. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll show. I am Ralph Sutton. With me, looking adorable on his bed, is Big J Okerson. How are you, buddy?
I like
seeing your little feeties in the back.
Yeah, my tootsies.
Yeah,
your little tootsies. So sweet.
And,
yeah.
And tattoos.
And tattoos. Yep.
Tattoos, yeah, and yeah. Tootsies.
Yeah. It's a good name for an album, by the way. Tattoos. And
I really
tootsies.
Don't have the correct personality for as many tattoos as I have.
That's true. You look more badass than you are. You're more gentle.
Yeah, I know. Whenever someone's like, I've seen someone nervously like cross the street away from me, I've always had like a. I'm like, lady, you should be thrilled that I'm on the same side of the street as you.
Yeah,
I'm the person who will help you if, God forbid, something happens.
I mean, as a guy who is 6'6 with very, at one point, really long hair, I would scare the shit out of people. I'm like, if you knew what a puss I am, you would be beating me up as I walk down the street. So let's introduce this guy correctly. I mean, for God's sakes, first of all, the thing I found out that I had no idea, born in London, which is crazy, son of Jewish German Holocaust survivors, which is also wild, journalist, actor, producer, former lawyer, politician, was the mayor of Cincinnati, multi-Emmy award-winning. Not only that, maybe the most iconic daytime TV show of all time. Only can be introduced one
Suck
way.
Suck on that, Oprah.
Which is the only way we can introduce him is this way. Jerry. It is Jerry Springer on the show. How are you, sir?
Oh, great. Please don't get up. Thank you.
Thank you. You know what? Let me jump in with that question right away, which is, do you remember when the Jerry chance started? Because obviously the show was very different when it first started. It was more straight up like interview style of the time. Then some other producer came on at some point and it kind of morphed into what the show that most people know. Do you remember the time when that started? But it's synonymous and will be with you till the day you pass. People see you and it's going to be Jerry. Do you remember when that happened?
Yeah, not the exact day or anything like that, but it was about the time Ricky Lake had come out with the talk show, and she really had the first talk show that appealed to kids. Everyone else was going after Oprah's audience, which the demographic at the time was referred to as middle-aged housewives. And then Ricky came along, and when I say kids, I mean high school, college, and college age. And the audience used to chant, go, Ricky, or something like that. Yeah. And I think that's where our producer probably got the idea. Or maybe it was just people in the audience because people started chanting things. And it could have been that. But then once it was on the air, then everyone who came to the show, and then, of course, it just grew and grew. The most uncomfortable place it happens, because it does, you know, it just
at a funeral or something would be amazing if it happened at a funeral.
Well, that would be Well, I actually, it wasn't a funeral, but my wife and I were vacationing in Italy, and we were, we were at some famous museum, or maybe it was either France or Italy. I'm embarrassed. But anyway, we're in a museum. And, you know, you have to be very quiet in the museum. And what is this? And all of a sudden, but there were some kids there, and they started going. And the guy didn't speak English, so he didn't know what was going on, the guard there. And it kind of got out of hand. But the worst place is, you know, you go to a football game. It's a Sunday afternoon. You're in this big stadium. I think it was at the time Riverfront Stadium where the Bengals played. And when you go into the men's room there, you know, the urinals, and the bathroom is about 30 yards long. Right. You know, it's just enormous men's room. And everyone, you got 500 guys in there lining up, waiting their turn at the urinal. And I get up there and someone spots me. And all of a sudden, everyone starts chanting, "Jerry, Jerry." And at my age, there's enough pressure on me going. Yeah. You know, and, you know, "Hey, guys, I'll be right with you." You know, they're. And then when I go, they're cheering.
I don't think I could. I could pee if fucking 50 people were cheering my name. I don't know.
Well, it was a burden.
The Jerry chant is so iconic. But I always had when I started doing a stand up in New York, I had a long time. I was never able to make happen, but I wanted to go get a chant started at the Jerry Springer show, because I used to use. I think I even had jokes on stage before about how funny. When you hear the guy, like the, you know, the patient zero, the eye of the storm for a chant, where there's just a dead moment and someone's really, someone's life is falling apart on stage. And they're like, and you know, it's like, "I can't believe you're my sister and you did that to me." And then you just hear a voice in the background go, "Take off your pants." And you go, "Take off your pants. Take off your pants."
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Don't apologize. It was the most fantastic television ever. I'm the right age for all of it to hit me. I got the Jerry Springer Uncensored videos, and I loved all of it. Well, I was wrapped in.
Jerry, that actually pivots to what you've been saying lately, where you kind of tongue-in-cheekly say that you'd blame yourself in a way for the demise of America because how popular the show became. But the part about it that I thought was fascinating is that this doesn't exist anymore, in that all the daytime talk shows today are hosted by celebrities interviewing other celebrities, whether it's Drew Barrymore or whoever the hell has a show. At one point, it was Harry Connick Jr. had a show, but it's all famous people interviewing famous people. You were, at the time, at least in the beginning, relatively unknown, especially when the show started
outside of Cincinnati, totally,
and interviewing regular people. That part of it, I think, is sorely missed on American television right now.
I guess that's right. You weren't allowed to be on our show if you were known, and when the people came on our show, they used fake names because we didn't want to really hurt anybody. You know, the whole show was tongue in cheek. So we're not out there to, you know, and nor did people come on the show to become famous, which is what usually people say that criticize the show. Oh, they want their 15 minutes of fame. No one became famous by being on the show because you didn't know who these people were. I thought after a while that this was unique and kind of neat. I enjoy talking just to regular people. I really don't know any celebrities. I mean, I'll see them at a convention or something, or maybe I'll be on the same program they are. Mm-hmm. But, I don't live in Hollywood. And, I got the same five friends I've always had. Okay, maybe now it's four. One guy didn't like me.
We are all getting older.
The show was different because of that. And I'm not saying it made it better. I'm just saying it was different.
You know, it's interesting. You got to, I'm assuming actually, maybe you did catch more heat for this than I'd know. But as, you know, someone who does a lot of broadcasting myself now, the flack I've gotten or have seen with like we had Milo Yiannopoulos on one of my podcasts, and just to mention that we were going to have him, and we're a comedy podcast that's just going to be ridiculous anyway, and we were going to have him on and, you know, hear what he had to say. If it was wacky, then we'd, you know, we'd say it's wacky, if whatever. And the flack we got before he even showed up about giving him a platform, like there was no trust. There's no more trust in the host or the person who's leading the show to kind of like, you know, not like glorify something that's bad. And you, I always used the Springer show as an example. I'm like, I don't remember there being like national problems when you'd be in the early days of the show, when it was like, you know, Hasidic Jews and the Nazis who hate them. Like nobody was like, nobody was like, you can't give these Nazis a platform. It's like, you'd almost let them.
No, dig their own holes. Let them dig their own holes.
Yeah.
The criticism that came, we had a couple of rules on the show, and the one was that there wasn't allowed to be any censorship. Mm-hmm. That bad language, because of the networks, whatever, would be bleeped out, and total nudity on the television show. You know, they put digitalized over it so you couldn't see. But the subject matter, there was no censorship allowed. So, you know, I remember we did one show on neo-Nazis. And of course, you know, as the introduction said, I'd lost my family in the Holocaust. So, you know, I obviously was not a fan of these people. But the show was about, had no censorship. So I couldn't say, just because I don't like them, they're not allowed to be on. The whole concept was anybody has a right to say whatever they want to say, and the audience has a right to comment back. And that's why the audience could boo. And that's why, you know, so I didn't get that kind of, the kind of criticism I got was that the show was demeaning a certain class of people. So, you know, sometimes in an inner city community, we say, how come, you know, the show's always making African-Americans look bad? And then people in Appalachia would say, well, how come you're always making poor white people look bad? And how come you're making gay people look bad? How come you're making... The point was, if you were on the show, you're on because of it, of... people that don't have problems don't come on the show.
Right, exactly. Right. And also, so, I think the biggest mistake in our culture is people don't realize freedom of speech doesn't mean freedom of consequences. You know, that's number one. Number two, there was another rivalry on your show, or not rivalry, controversy on your show that I was unaware of, that when there was a lot of fighting on the show, because I watched a clip of you in like the late 90s where some local councilmen wanted to shut down the show because there was so much fighting on the show, which I didn't know that was a thing. That's pretty wild.
Yeah, there was when the show was really going through the roof in terms of ratings, then it became a popular target for politicians. And there was a council member in Chicago, an alderman, they call them, and he wanted to shut down the show, which, of course, is an absurdity because a local community has no power over a national television show.
Right.
You know, the FCC, if anybody, it's the FCC, and et cetera. So, but I had to show up. There was a public hearing, and all of cable news covered the hearings live for hours.
Wow. I don't remember that, but that's wild.
Yeah, this, I guess this was in the, it was in the 90s, the 1990s. Mm-hmm. And, so I came, there was this huge crowd outside of City Hall. So, you know, I come walking in, and we had a young attorney who represented our show. And I said to him before the hearing starts, when they have me, you know, up there on the stand, just like you see in all the movies, all the councilmen, aldermen are up there on top, and I'm sitting, you know, in the witness chair. And I said, when they ask me some questions, I'm going to lean over and, you know, put my hand over my mouth, and we're going to pretend that you're giving me advice. I'm going to go, you know, it's every once in a while we did that. And he would just have this smile on his face because he knew what I was doing. Anyway, so at some point, the argument they were making, which had some bases, I guess. Our security were Chicago cops. So what the council was saying is, when fights break out, how come the Chicago cops are not stepping in and for assault,
right?
Physical assault, which they would if it happened on the street. And then the councilman very smartly said, the only reason he wouldn't do that is if these fights are fake, knowing full well that anybody saying that if we said the fights were fake, which they were not, but if we said the fight, there goes the show.
Right, of course.
So he figured he really had us. So they showed a video from the show of where there was really this fight, and then they froze it. And this was the moment. If it was a movie, it would be the climax of the movie, the last 5 minutes. Suddenly the cameras pour in. Mr. Springer, you just saw this fight? Yes. And the fight took place on your show? Yes. Are these fights fake? And there was just a hushed silence. And I'm thinking, wow. Because I don't want to get the cops in trouble.
Right.
But the fights really aren't fake. So what I said was, I don't know, they look real to me. And that, what does that mean?
Right.
They look real.
Yeah.
How do I know if someone who is throwing a punch is really pretending,
right,
not really to hurt the guy, but he's on television and he wants to, you know, how do I know?
That's really
and
great.
And then the audience started cheering, and the chairman of the committee pounded the gavel. He says, "We've had enough of this."
That's great. Dismissed. And also, people don't realize at one point you were beating Oprah in the ratings. You're getting 7 million viewers a day. It's crazy how popular the show was. It was like
it was
a national,
fun and funny.
Yeah, it was just amazing how popular
also,
it was.
Also, with the fights, as the show got huge, did it start swallowing itself in that the vetting process, did it have to become more? Because there's definitely people who would just, you know, a couple and their friend who's a buddy just going like, all right, look, I'm going to say I'm banging your girlfriend.
Yeah.
You come out, take a couple of shots at me and we'll roll around and we'll get on TV. I mean, that has to be.
Yeah, there was a lot of that. But I'd say 95% of the time we caught them, because before you get on the show, you go into a room in the back with the lawyers and a camera on you, and you have to sign that you will be personally liable for fraud if what you say isn't the truth.
Wow.
And more than a few backed out.
Yeah, I was going to say, because you got to sign this. He goes, and thank you.
Yeah, because I don't want to have to pay. I don't want to have to pay $30,000 because I made up the story.
I think other shows did that, though, because like I remember at the height of it all, when you mentioned Ricky Lake, Jenny Jones, Maury Povich, Richard Bay. I know personally a few people who got on the Richard Bay show, which I don't know if that ever got national. Did you know Richard Bay or no?
Yeah, but I was raised in New York, so I did.
I know friends of mine that lied just to get on Richard Bay. Their vetting process was probably a lot weaker, you know, because they were.
It's a bit of a more local show, and that was more in the realm of like a Morton Downey kind of show. It was like you're going to a Coliseum.
Yeah, and in those shows, they really, I guess, had to be careful because the host really was involved in the fighting and in the, you know, what was I? I had three lines. You did what? Come on out. We'll be right back. And that was my career. So I never really was, you know, I was dressed there in a suit and I wasn't. You watch Morton Downey because he was the personality of the show. And
right,
the same with Geraldo and those guys. They became who you really watched. I happened to be the host of the show, but I wasn't really involved in the controversy at all. I mean, I don't.
You were an observer as much as we were, I guess is a good way.
Yeah. And
Jerry, you had the funniest job and the best. You were my favorite part of the show. And simply because, and I've mentioned this a lot throughout my life, the chaos that would go on that show, and at the end of it, you know, there's a 300-pound black woman covered in cake, a guy dressed like a clown whose girlfriend doesn't understand that. And then when you come back from that last break and you go, friendship is defined a lot of ways. that final thought and it just being so genuine. That's the funniest. And you keeping a straight face for it, because I know you know it's hilarious with that chaos, you know, a man dressed like a chicken. And you're like, a lot of people say you have to love the family you're given. But is it fun?
It was always, well, it's probably the rabbi in me. I guess in the beginning it was, I wanted to separate myself. In the beginning, it was very selfish. I didn't want, because when we started the show, I was, the company that started the show, that owned the show, owned Phil Donahue, Sally Jesser, Raphael, et cetera, because I was doing the news for their affiliate in Cincinnati. And Phil was retiring, so they gave me, they took me to lunch and said, Phil's retiring, we're starting a new talk show, you're going to be the host. So it started out as a news show. I mean, we had, you know, Jesse Jackson, Oliver North, we, you know, it was a serious political, boring, but a serious political show. And then when Universal bought us, that's, you know, that's when the show became crazy. And I had been a politician. I had 10 years doing the news. I was a little self-conscious about suddenly doing all this crazy stuff. And everyone in my family, everyone who knew me said, you know, what is this all about? So it kind of was, at the end, I just wanted to have on the record, you know, when my judgment day comes, I want to be able to say, God, but remember my final thought. No, get that fire away from me.
Did the final thought not, was in the first few years when you were, like, I read even, they even modeled your look after Phil Donahue. They give you a similar haircut and the glasses to make you kind of look like him. But was the final thought not part of that beginning and it evolved into it once again?
No, it was always part. It always was, because when I did the news, I did the news for 10 years. And I had just finished being mayor. And to do the news, I really didn't, in the beginning, have interest in being a news anchor. So the deal was I would agree to anchor the news if they would, at the end of every broadcast, let me do my two-minute commentary.
Oh, okay.
And that was fairly revolutionary. There was a fellow in Chicago, Walt Jacobson, who also was a news anchor who did commentary at the end. Stations had editorials, but it was always given by the station manager, the general manager, the owner, et cetera. Never, there was a line between reporting the news and giving your opinion. So I blurred that line. So it was really a gamble, but the station was in third place. They figured, well, let's see what happens. So happened it did very well.
It's funny how commonplace that is now, where back then.
Oh, well, now, yes.
That's really wild.
It's only opinion
it's
news.
It's only opinion news. All right, before we go any further, you know these guys forever. They've been a sponsor of the network. They've been a sponsor of Skankfest. There is no Delta 8 Hempire here right now, but we are talking about Yo Delta. Delta 8 is basically legal in most states. It's found in weed and can be shipped almost completely nationwide. And most importantly, if you're over the age of 21, it'll get you really fucking high. You could stock up on vapes or gummies at yodelta.com. The 25% off code is GAS. That's G-A-S. 25% off at yodelta.com. And you could stock up on all your Delta 8 high-quality lab-tested needs and get really high in the process. Yodelta.com, promo code GAS. Let's get back into it. And also, I saw a great clip of you that was played on one of the late night shows where when you were a news anchor and you totally broke because the teleprompter broke and you just started rambling.
Elvis. January 8th, the date of Elvis's birth, 1983. January 8th, 1983. You can look it up. And back then, we had the teleprompters. It wasn't a computerized.
Somebody would feed it manually with a piece of paper.
Yes, you have a sheet of paper. It'd be typed out. I would type it out that evening. And then each paper would be slipped in to a conveyor belt like in the grocery store with a camera facing down on it. So when I look at the camera that was on me, I would see my words going by. Well, you always had an intern slipping the pages in. And this intern either, you know, God bless her, but the pages were out of order in the mid-sentence. She then flustered, threw a paper in. It was upside down. I mean, and I had just started the news. I started the news on November 8th of 1982, because I remember it was the Monday after the election. That was my first day doing the news. And then January, so much 2 months later, I was brand new. I was having trouble reading a teleprompter anyway, because grownups never learn how to read out loud. It's something you do in the second grade. Right. But after that, you know, you wonder why, when you see these local car dealer commercials, why these guys that normally can have a conversation with,
like robots. And,
yes, because they're reading a prompter, and grownups don't know how to read out loud.
That's every commercial during your show, by the way. We don't get paid unless we make money for you.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, I know. I mean, it's a skill you learn. Now I can read a prompter, but back then.
It's worth looking up if you've never seen it. It is a really funny.
Oh, and I just, so I didn't know where to pick it up. And I'm going, because Elvis was young, and he was, he died when he was young. And because he was young, and then, of course, the co-anchor next to me and the weather guy, they are losing it. And finally, in the middle, I just gave up and I turn. I go, Norma?
It's really funny. I really enjoyed watching it. Yeah, I really did. Let me. So it's still in syndication now. Most people might not even realize that the Jerry Springer show ended in 2018, I think July of 2018.
Right.
And then there was Judge Jerry for a few years as well. But to everyone, most people would probably think it's still on the air. Steve Wilkos, who came from your show, is still on the air. You're the EP of that.
Yeah.
So most people, you're on the air still all the time, right? That is what it is. Turn on the TV. Yeah. Is there, for you, when you look back at that, I don't know how many years it is, 31 years, I believe, of new shows that stand out as your wildest, weirdest moments that you look back on, you're like, what the fuck did I just, like, what was that?
Well, one quick answer to that, and then a longer story about it. The quick answer is, just as background, I was never allowed to know what the show was about.
Oh, wow.
So they hand me the card, which you see me carrying around, and all the card had on it, you know, the front part had Jerry Springer Show, but on the back part, all it had on were the names of the guests. And my job was, when I go out there, which is why you'll notice the first sentence in every segment is I introduce the guests, and then I say, so what's going on? And they then tell me their story, and my job is to make jokes about what they're telling me, you know, make quips or whatever that. And the reason I'm not told what the show's about, because then it would all look horribly fake. My reaction would be fake.
Right.
In other words, then I would have to go, oh my gosh, really? You know, it doesn't work. So for me, because I'm not an actor, for me, it was a lot easier to just go out there, somebody tells me a crazy story, and have the reaction that you would have sitting at home watching. Because we're all alike. We're a bunch of guys, and somebody says something silly like this, you got a reaction. And so I never knew what was coming. On this one particular show, we put the titles on after the show because you never know which direction the show's going. And this was a guy who married his horse. And he was from...
Was the horse on the show too? No.
Yes.
Oh,
here's what happened. But I didn't know. Remember, I'm not allowed to know what's going on. So the show's, you know, I look up and there's this guy sitting on the stage, one chair there. And this middle-aged guy, let's call him Bob. I have no memory of what his name was, but let's say it's Bob. And I say, welcome, Bob, to the show. Bob, so what's going on? Bob says, well, I don't know, Jared. I'm having trouble with the neighbors. I say, yeah, what's the problem? He says, well, they don't seem to like my wife. Well, what's wrong with your wife? Nothing. She keeps to herself and all this. Well, this is kind of boring. It's going nowhere. So I look at the next one. Well, okay, let's meet your wife. Here is Pixel. And out comes this horse. Okay, the crowd goes wild. But here's the thing. Being a fairly normal person, when I saw a horse come out, my assumption was that poor Pixel fell off the horse backstage. So I say, stop the cameras. Is she okay? And my producer, Richard, is going, no, it's his wife. That's Pixel.
Oh, my God.
And it was unbelievable. So Pixel comes out, and it really, not that I have to tell you, it really was weird, because every time I stood between Pixel and Bob, who's sitting in the chair, Pixel would nudge me out of the way. In other words, Pixel wanted eye contact with Bob. And, you know, and Pixel goes up and kind of licks his face and that kind of, I mean, but the crowd is going crazy. I mean, it took 10 minutes to get back to the show.
Yeah. And the beauty of that is still at the end of the show, you had to go, who says what love
is? Oh, yeah. 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 You know what I don't remember? Yeah.
Webster's defines it as.
I'd love to see what I said. Yeah, you know, it was so many years ago. It was interesting. Yeah.
It was also funny because in the later years of the shows, and when the girls in the audience just started to come to show their boobs and everything, it was funny because even as still as emotional and on track as the final thought was, it started at the end getting introduced by a girl being like, stay tuned. We'll be back with Jerry's final thought. And then just pull her boobs out. Yeah. And then it's still a serious emotional thing. I mean,
we know how to draw a crowd.
I really, I, as a performer myself, I love the absurdity of it all. I love that, like, I could tell that you got it. That's why I always thought the flack on the show was so bizarre. I'm like, because you were also very, like, I mean, even down to like the movie, The Ringmaster, like you're parodying. Idea of like, but I have a question was when did you guys, because every, when all the shows were going, well, you obviously won the long game there, but in all of the shows came out, they all seemed to find their part, and the people who didn't find their like lane kind of went on. Ricky Lake kind of went on, Jenny Jones went away, but Mari figured out the paternity tests. Right. You were the cheating with the fights and the crazy, like, you know, the circus of it more. It
was we were the circus. Yeah.
And it was,
you're right. You had to find, well, that's true of all television, I guess.
Were you guys friends, all of you, all the hosts? Did you guys ever like commiserate and stuff?
Yeah. I'm closest with Steve.
Obviously. Yeah.
Right. And we became really good friends. In fact, his wife, he met his wife on the show, and his wife,
Is she a horse by any chance? Because that would be.
No, she's just the opposite.
You know, Steve's actually done this show a couple of years ago. Steve did the show as well. Yeah. He was in studio here.
Rochelle was my executive producer for years.
Oh, was there ever an episode that you couldn't air? Like you taped it and something happened. I go, we can't put that on the air.
Well, it's nothing. I would never be able to say that. I don't think so. That's a great question. I don't know that there was ever, because as I said, we weren't allowed to have censorship.
Right.
Anything which didn't meet the network standards, for example, we just bleeped out. So that was it. But no, there was never like a whole show.
Mm-hmm. I may be wrong, but I
don't remember any show like.
Can I ask if did you have to go through a phase where you ever sensitive to the criticism? Because as someone who takes it myself, also like there was a time where you really see enough people saying terrible things about you. It's like you want to reach out to all of them and be like, no, I'm just like just having fun. We're just being silly. It's just like it's just comedy, or it's just it's entertainment.
I admit I was jolted for a second when, what's the guy's name? The United States Senate wanted to hold hearings on the show. A lot of the Christian right movement, some leaders would be there. First of all, I never took anything about the show personally. I mean, I was hired to host a show about crazy. If I was hired to host a show about basketball, every day I'd have basketball players on. Mm. When I did the news, I covered murders. Didn't mean I endorsed murder. You know, you do.
That's where you and I differ, Jerry. I endorse murder.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I knew you from
Ralph's pro murder.
Yeah. Yeah. Pro murder. Get that on record. That, yeah. Somewhere
it's a rare stance to take.
Yeah.
I read this and you didn't, you talking about it a couple times, but you didn't elaborate. I'm curious if you could. You said guests would be given a list of 21, very specific number, possible surprises that would happen on the show.
Right. Yes.
They didn't, some of them did not know why they were on the show.
The number may have changed over time, but it was 21. The time I looked at the list, it was 21.
But things like what? Like adultery? Like it just would be.
Yeah, whatever. Because the whole concept of the show, we never wanted, and this isn't Pollyannish, we really never, it would make no sense. We never wanted to hurt anyone. Right. So there was never as soon as if we were bad like that, like you come on our show and we're going to ruin your life. Well, why would anyone ever want to come on the show? So that clearly, and so for that reason, from day one, we never want someone on the show. So if there's going to be a surprise, and there were a bunch of shows with surprises, ahead of time, everybody, because you don't know that there's going to be a surprise, everybody's given a list of 21 possible surprises that could happen on the show. If there's any one of these 21 possibilities you couldn't handle on national television, you know, just put a check mark on that. And then you wouldn't be on the show. Not because that was it, but we can only do the show if you're okay with these possibilities. So when people were on the show, they were legitimately surprised, but they couldn't the next day say, I can't believe they did that to me on television.
That's why I'm sure that's something
that's why we did it.
It probably morphed over the years too. As you did it, it got bigger and bigger. You had to elaborate on that list more because more and more wacky things would happen.
Well, did that become legal at some point too? I know Jenny Jones, obviously that terrible tragedy there.
That wouldn't have happened on our show simply because of that, which wasn't, that was put in as
a seems like an easy fix.
But wasn't there two, I don't mean to bring the show in a downer, but wasn't there two things that happened on your show that were controversial? Like somebody committed suicide and somebody murdered somebody. Didn't that happen? Or am I wrong?
I don't know about the suicide thing. There was a murder, but it only happened that they were, I think it was 6 months later.
Oh, okay. That's not related then at that point. Yeah.
Yeah. They happened to have been on the show.
Right.
They were like warring neighbors or something.
Right. And also, they probably knew that I endorsed murder and they wanted to get on my side.
Yeah. Yeah. But that was, and that was thrown out of court immediately. But I'll tell you how many people we've had on the show. We did the show, original programs, we've had 5,000 shows over the 27 years of programming.
Wow.
And each show we had at least 10 guests on, right?
Wow.
You did three separate stories. You had at least three people. There were triangles, so you had three people on the show. So we had at least 10 people per show. So 5,000 shows times 10, that means 50,000 human beings have been on our show. 50,000. It probably means you can't go into a crowd any place where there's not at least someone who's related to someone, has someone in their family.
Six degrees of Jerry Springer. Yeah, for sure.
And that was so, obviously, when you have 50,000 people, there are going to be people that had all kinds of things going on in their lives.
Right. So you were never involved with the concepts of what was coming on. You would find out day of. You never pitched ideas. Hey, wouldn't it be fun if we got this or that?
No.
You never knew any of that.
No, and I'm not talented. I think I'm smart. I think I'm reasonably smart, and I like to think I'm a nice guy, but I'm not talented like you would consider talent in show business. So I don't know how you put a television show together. Mm-hmm. I'm not a producer. And so I never, ever tried, and this is in all the different shows I've been involved in, I've never tried to be the one I say, we got to do this, we should do that. Know your lane, what you're good in. What I'm comfortable in is because of 10 years in politics, 10 years on the news, and 30 years television. I'm comfortable talking to regular people. That's my comfort level. So you put me in that environment, fine. I don't have to rehearse. It's like getting up in the morning. All my life, I've been talking to unfamous people.
Right.
And that I can do. But to come in with an idea, this will really work. If there was a formula for what television works, there'd be no failures.
Yeah. Right.
Because why wouldn't everybody follow that formula?
Right, exactly. And by the way, Jay's going to love this.
You catch lightning in a bottle.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery.
Yeah. Jay's going to love this if I'm wrong, because I try and do research and sometimes I read something like, is this fucking
sometimes
true?
These are big whiffs.
It's a big swing and a miss if it's wrong, but it would be
okay,
great.
Okay, there are two strikes on you to the bottom of the ninth. Yeah.
So you were lawyer at some point, yes. Right? Early in your career. Is it true that you were fucking Bobby Kennedy's lawyer?
Not his lawyer. I worked in his campaign.
Oh, okay. Well, that's close enough. JD, give me a pass on that.
You sound like an idiot, dude.
Yeah, that was my first job out of law school. My first job was working for Bobby, but I was working 7 Midwestern states on college campuses trying to get the McCarthy kids to shift over to Bobby for the convention.
Okay, I'm giving that a pass. I got that right as far as I'm concerned.
It's at least a foul tip.
I have a question too that I also thought as the show moved on in the later years, when you'd go to when everybody comes out from the show, like you said, all 10 people, all 10 guests are out on stage at the end in various degrees of dress or undress or torn things. I always thought this was, again, it's interesting in a comedy show. I can feel like I could say whatever and ball bust the audience because there's a tongue in cheek and there's an understanding that you're at a comedy show. I used to really feel uncomfortable when these people, because I almost feel like the people who went up there bared their soul. They put on a show. They just really was super vulnerable on the stage. And then people in the audience go, I have a question for that big fat pig over there. man, like they're so mean out of the gates. It was such a.
Yeah. The audience oftentimes was. But what was, what we explained, I can say, I think with a clear conscience that I don't, except for the neo-Nazi I know, but there may have been a few, I never was mean to any of the guests. And I think not because I had to train myself, but I know that we're all alike. Some of us just had better luck in the gene pool of parents. Some of us were born with a better brain So with these stories, I really kind of liked most of our guests. I mean, I get it. And when people are ticked off, they curse, they fight, they scream, they cry. That's normal. The example I always give is if they're is a English professor from Harvard who comes home one evening and sees his wife in bed with an next door neighbor. I promise you, this English professor from Harvard does not say, "Forsooth, my dear, what is it that I have found?" He acts exactly like anyone on that show. He'll throw things. He'll curse. He'll try to wrestle the guy. He'll go crazy. Brian, that's who we all are.
Yeah, but equalizer for sure.
Yeah, we can dress well. We have the money to do that, and we've learned good manners and stuff like. So that's the only thing that separates us. I'll tell you, when the show is over, almost all the time, the guests could have been involved in fight, wigs ripped off, the whole thing. Afterwards, they say, "Jerry, can we have a picture? Can we do a selfie? Will you hold my kid while I take a picture?" They're like everybody else.
That's what I was going to say too. Where you said you genuinely liked all the guests, and I was going to say, because what's funny is in their lowest moment, there's still that L again, where these people live, you know, these aren't like Los Angeles, you know, like
elite,
yeah, elite hipster people or something like that, that were coming on the show. So they're, these are people, when they meet you, like they're meeting a celebrity and maybe the first and only time in their life. So even in their lowest moment, they still have that thing of like, oh man, Jerry Springer, that's so cool, like, which is awesome. Yeah.
Did a lot of times guests have to be escorted out separately because they still had animosity towards each other? Or by the end of the show?
There were times I've heard the security guys talk about that. Yeah, I'll hear backstage, yeah, take him out of this thing. So, yeah, because, as I said, the stories were real.
Right.
So the emotion doesn't suddenly go away. But let's be honest, no one is going to come on that show if they started out not liking me.
Right.
I mean, you just say, no, I'm not on his show. He's an idiot. So that wouldn't have happened. So going in, they're not angry at me.
Right.
Right.
Going in, if anything, I'm going to be their protector. I'm the one that's not going to say bad things about them. That's not going to downgrade them, you know. And so whatever dignity they get out of the show is because I was nice to them. When the show's over, I shake their hands. I look them in the eye and, you know, I hope things work out or whatever. So
have you seen Jerry Springer, the opera?
Yeah.
I have not. I just saw that it was a thing. So I just was curious.
It turned out to be, okay, I'm in, this is, again, I think it's in the 1990s. I think so. I'm in London. I'm doing some shows there. And there was some event while I was there, like some award show, and there's a reception afterwards, and I'm standing around, and this guy who I don't remember at all who it was comes up and he says, hey, we're writing an opera about you, is that okay? So yeah, oh great, go, sure. I mean, you know why? I didn't give it any thought. About 2 years later, I get an invitation to come to the Fringe Festival, which is in Scotland every summer.
Yeah.
And it's an arts thing with plays, music, you know, everything that's on the fringe. And they have written this opera. And I didn't go to see it, but it all of a sudden was playing on the West End. And the singers were the Royal Opera Company. It was a serious opera, and it won the Olivier Awards, which in England, it's our Tonys.
Wow.
So it won all the Tonys. I mean, it ran away with all the Tonys, 8 of them. Then they bring the show. Oh, when it's in London, they invite me. So I figure, well, and I had nothing to do with this. I didn't write it. I didn't think about it. And I went to see it, and it was uncomfortable to watch it because it's about me, and everyone in the audience obviously keeps looking at what my reaction is. It was uncomfortable to watch. And in terms of language, it was filthy. Okay. You know, there's one song using the F word, and the entire opera, the entire operatic song is just that word. About 150 times it said, you know, just on. And the voices are, it's amazing. And it's about my show. And at the end of the first act, I get murdered. I go to hell. And there I meet Jesus and the devil. And with my final thought, we rise and go to heaven at the end.
The whole thing is available on YouTube, by the way, if anybody does want to watch it.
Yeah, it's a serious, it's a riot. And, but again, it was very controversial because it was sacrilegious. Mm-hmm. And 25,000 protesters.
Jesus.
At the BBC, because the BBC ran it on television on a Sunday night.
With the expletives in?
Apparently.
All right, that's pretty
wild. 25,000 That's the BC report. If you're looking it up on YouTube, I assume they have that story of all the protests, and they came up with the number 25,000. So it was very controversial. And of course, you know, I think the most controversy, though, was the anti-religion thing, making fun of Jesus and stuff like that. So, you know, and certainly I thought it was a crazy idea for them to play it on television.
That's really wild. That's really
that invades people's homes.
Now I'm compelled to watch it. I didn't watch it, but now I'm compelled to watch it. Yeah.
Do you, on a similar thing as far as being like immortalized with something like that, do you know how many times, and do you have a particular favorite time that you've been animated on one of the big shows?
Well, Simpsons. Yeah. I've been on that a few times, and the best one was...
Didn't South Park do it on Springer, too? They did that, didn't they?
A number of the shows, because my nose is so identifiable. the Halloween show. The Halloween show on The Simpsons is...
The Treehouse of Horror, yeah.
That's great. So also, you know, you hosted briefly America's Got Talent. You Miss World, Miss Universe, Price is Right Live. You did WWE Raw, which is crazy. But recently, most recently, you were the Beatle on The Masked Singer.
And, time's running out.
But what's funny, I don't think a lot of people realize, is you have a history of singing because you released a record called Dr. Talk, which was all country music covers in the 90s. So you've always had a singing passion, I guess.
Well, but like, you know, I can carry a tune. I don't have a voice. I was on Broadway on the musical Chicago. I was Billy Flynn. But again, that role, even though I had three songs, there's not a wide range of notes in the songs that Billy Flynn has to do. Mm-hmm. On The Masked Singer, which I did, I guess it aired about a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
There, I only had one song to do. And I knew they didn't think I was going to go very far because they only gave me one song.
That's really funny.
I said, hey, you know, because you're on the show. And every show, they have three new people or whatever, and then two go home. And obviously, the other acts were professionals. I mean, they were amazing. So obviously, I didn't belong in there. But I knew, and they kept saying, oh, no, you're going to go on, you know, because they want to give you confidence. And I remember I was backstage, and I said, you know, I have to sing another song if I'm not going home. What song do you want me to sing? Obviously, there was no rehearsal. The orchestra didn't know what to, you know, it was absurd. Funny. So they obviously knew I was going home. But yeah, what was that song? The Way You Look Tonight. Yeah.
Right. I listened to your album that you released that you did, Mr. Tambourine Man.
And you still have me on here. Funny, What's wrong with you?
And you also said they kept it. You had to keep it a real secret. Nobody knew that you were in it. You couldn't tell anybody.
No, you signed a contract with a severe financial penalty.
Wow.
Because the whole show, you can understand, they put millions of dollars into their network show. And if on social media, you know who the acts are next week, there goes the whole show.
Right. Of course.
When you get close to the studio, first of all, they put us each up in different hotels. When you get close to the studio, they literally put a bag on your head. You walk in. I have to this day no idea who was on the show with me.
Wow, that's cool. That's cool.
It's like the CIA. I mean, everything.
Was there any crazy guess of who? I didn't watch the episode, but was there any crazy guess of who they thought you were? Because they always guess ridiculous guesses.
Yeah. No, they were. They weren't crazy picks because they gave it away pretty much with the clues.
Okay.
You know,
they do make crazy picks. I was like, Burt Lancaster.
Yeah.
Rock. Is it The Rock? Is it, Momoa?
No, they connected based on the clues. Like when I was in Mike Myers' movie, The Spy Who Shagged Me, you know, so someone said Mike Myers, and things like that. So the picks weren't crazy, but some got me right. Two of them got me right.
Oh, okay, that's cool. Yeah, and then lastly, so you started your podcast not that long ago, I don't think. I have Tales, Tunes, and Tomfoolery.
Well, actually, 8 years ago.
Eight, that's what I meant.
But
8 years
ago. See, now there you whiffed.
Yeah, that's a whiff.
The other
that's
one
a,
you foul tip.
Yeah, that's
this,
a whiff. That's a whiff.
I got to bring you up this. On this
I
one.
Did listen to Paul. Yeah, they recently had Paul of Peter, Paul, and Mary on. I listened a little bit of that yes. episode. That's really cool.
Yeah, that really was. That really was. You know, the impact. It's, you know, today we're just as political. But the difference is back in the 60s when we were political, it's because a large part of it was every one of us was going to Vietnam or you had someone in your family was going to Vietnam or everyone knew someone who had been killed there. So it wasn't like politics was, well, I'm interested in it. I'm not interested in it. Everybody was. That's all you talked about. And so it became the music of the day. Whether it was Bob Dylan, Peter, Paul, and Mary, you know, it was political music because that consumed our lives. Mm-hmm. And nowadays it's the politics is horrible, but it's not as all consuming. Although it's friendships are lost over it now.
Right. Jay, before we do the first, any other questions you want to ask him?
No, I think we covered it all. I appreciate you being here with us, Jerry. This is a great.
Yeah,
we're looking forward to this all week.
Yeah, me too. Oh, we gotta do the first and then wrap this up.
The first time ever I saw concert did drugs had sex.
The name of the show is the SDR Show, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll Show. We've asked every guest this since the dawn of time, their first experience with all three. We start with rock and roll, and we ask you the first concert you ever went to, ideally on your own volition, the concert, it doesn't have to be a rock concert, just the concert you went to.
I think the first concert I went to was Bobby Rydell at the Copacabana. for the senior prom.
That's so nice. Cool. You know, it's funny. He died not that long ago, Bobby.
Yeah,
right
I
now.
Know.
And I was on a podcast with him. The two of us were the guests. What a bizarre combination. Not like yes. maybe 6 months before he died. At least I got to actually talk with him, which is pretty wild. I got to talk with Bobby Rydell.
Well,
pretty
I insane. Think he and Frankie Avalon and anyway, there were three of them were on tour. Fairly recently. I know they came down to Sarasota and
Frankie Valli too.
Frankie Avalon.
Yeah.
But
that's Frankie funny. Avalon was on this particular performance.
And now the first drug you ever did after weed, unless weed wasn't your first drug.
You won't believe this, but I don't have never done
anything.
Drugs.
Never done
no,
anything.
But,
I believe
but
you.
Let me explain why.
Nerd.
Yeah, one was a nerd. When I was in college, understand, I'm 78, so I'm in college at in 1961. I start going to college. Back then, you know, if people were young people, it was beer. It was beer. You had kegs on a Friday night, the fraternity parties. I honestly don't remember anyone in our fraternity. It wasn't like I said no and they all said yes.
Right, right, right.
Now I graduate college. It's 1965. Lyndon Johnson calls up the draft and all of a sudden everyone's going to Vietnam. That was really the start of the, particularly among, in white communities, the start of the widespread drug use.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm in law school. Well, they made it very clear that you will not be admitted to the bar if you are caught smoking marijuana.
All right.
So you didn't touch it. You know, my parents aren't spending all this money to send me to law school and I'm going to blow it because I'm going to try some marijuana. So that we weren't, you know, the law students weren't even tempted to do that.
That
it was too
sense.
Strict.
Then
I graduate. Now I'm running for Congress as an anti-war candidate. Well, if I'm running for Congress, I can't mess with that. And then, you know, I get elected city council and mayor, so I still can't do it. Now I've got a kid. And, you know, in other words, it never was a point. And now I'm at the point. Well,
right. What's the point at this point? I appreciate it. And how about the first time Jerry Springer had sex?
Rush week. when I 1961, I was 17, first time away from home. You know, I lived in New York, and I went to Tulane undergraduate in New Orleans, and the fraternities took you to Bourbon Street during Rush Week. Yeah.
All right, well, that's fucking awesome. It's just an honor to have you on. Go to jerryspringer.com. You'll hear the newest episodes of his podcast and clips and stuff. You openly are not tech savvy at all, but is there anything else you want to plug before we go around the room and do our plugs?
No, just be nice to everybody. No, I have nothing to plug.
Jay, yeah. Your plugs?
BigJComedy.com, all over the road. This weekend, Denver. Thanksgiving week going home to Philadelphia, going to be at Helium there. Austin, Texas after that. Nonstop through the year, through March, I think every weekend. Special, hopefully coming out end of February or beginning of February. And that's being edited right now. Check out The Bonfire on Faction Talk, Series XM 103, and Legion of Skanks right here on the Gas Digital Network.
And follow me everywhere, and I am Ralph Sutton. My other podcast on health and wellness called The Good Sugar Podcast comes out every Monday. We're opening up our first location on 3rd Avenue and 69th Street. It'll be open before most likely the end of the year, but definitely maybe even sooner. But honestly, we add a song every week to the playlist, the strshow.com/playlist. Let's add a Peter, Paul, and Mary song. You want to do Leaving on a Jet Plane, just to be obvious, as a way of paying homage to your most recent guest on your podcast, Jerry Springer. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
It
truly was.
You guys are great. This was fun. Thanks, guys.
Thank you very much. See you next time on the SDR Show.
Yep.
All my bags are packed. I'm ready to go. I'm standing here outside your door. I hate to wake you up to say goodbye, but the dawn is breaking. It's early morn. He's waiting, he's blowing his horn. Already I'm so lonesome I could cry. So kiss me and smile for me. Tell me that you'll wait for me. Hold me like you'll never let me go. I'm leaving on a jet plane. I don't. There's so many times I've let you down. So many times I've played around. I tell you now, they don't mean a thing. Every place I go, I think of you. Every song I sing for you. When I come back, I'll wear your wedding ring. So kiss me and smile for me. Tell me that you'll wait for me. Hold me like you'll never let me go. I'm a leaving on a jet plane. I don't know when I'll be back again. To go. Now the time has come to leave you. One more time, let me kiss you. Then close your eyes, I'll be on my way. Dream about the days to come when I won't have to leave alone. About the time I won't have to say, kiss me and smile for me. Tell me that you'll wait for me. Hold me like you'll never let me go. I'm leaving on a jet plane. I don't know when I'll be back again. Don't know when I'll be back. again. Oh, babe, I hate to go.
You've been listening to the SDR Show.